You're listening to Last Word Radio, where you get the last word.
It's gonna be a football game tonight, now.
No doubt.
It's gonna be a football game.
I'm here.
Okay.
I'm being here.
All right, let's go, baby. Hey.
Play clock at 5. Pass is intercepted at the goal line by Malcolm Butler. Unreal.
And the Ohio State Buckeyes are the first national champions of the playoff era.
Ladies and gentlemen, football to football.
Your host, Sean Garmer, Gary Vaughn, and Randy Isbell.
Hello and welcome to another Football to Football. And Spreaker would tell me that they have a new update to this desktop app right when we're about to start. You know, they couldn't have told me like 30 minutes ago when I had this thing open. Anyway, I can't restart it now because it would cancel the show. But yeah, so we are down a man today, as and we may be down him for the preview as well, because Gary has been a little bit under the weather. He didn't do the Cowboys Jets rival with Randy and I because he woke up on Sunday and apparently couldn't talk, and his voice has gotten better, but it's still bad when I've talked to him and stuff. So you won't hear Gary tonight, but at least Randy's here with me.
Yeah, Gary at least warned you that he was going through an update himself.
Good one. I guess we'll get to talk about it more on Wednesday, but how is, done with all the Christmas shopping now?
Yes, surprisingly, it is not Christmas Eve, and I'm not out, like, at Walmart at 3 in the morning this year. The girlfriend definitely made sure I was on task and ready to go this year.
Yeah, we did ours, like, a lot of it on Sunday, which is why I didn't wind up doing the raffle for the Cardinals and Eagles game, and then I got the big present today, even though because I was with my daughter by myself today, because this is her first day of Christmas vacation, basically, and I was trying to put the thing together and like do all the updates and stuff without her looking, and she came in and she saw the Wii U and everything, and I was like, whatever. she can have, I mean, she still is at that age where, like, you know, it's not this big procession thing for her yet, so I don't feel too bad. My dad always let us have one of those before Christmas gifts anyway, and a lot of the times it was a game or something like that he knew would kind of keep me going until the next couple days, so...
So that brings up a good question I want to ask you. Were you a Christmas Eve family or a Christmas Day family?
Well, see, because two different nationalities here, just mom is Latin, so most of the Latino side of the family, just historically, most Latin families, they celebrate on the 24th. Or they do the whole, you do everything on the 24th and you wait till midnight, and then you open gifts, which is what my stepmom and her Mexican family would make us do. We'd have to go an hour out of our way, do all the other stuff, then you have to sit around and wait till midnight to open gifts, which I always thought was so silly, but whatever. Yeah, my dad, I grew up Christmas Day. That's how that was. Like, you got maybe one gift, the 23rd or the 24th, and then the rest of it was open on the 25th. I had to wait for everybody to get there, and then all the stuff was done, you know.
Yeah, my family was always the Christmas Eve family, and I always figured it was because my family was smart enough to go, we don't want to wake up at 6 o'clock in the morning when all the kids are going to freak out about opening presents. So we're going to open them up the night before, let you play with them a bunch, get that all out of the way, and then you might sleep in, and then we'll do like the stocking. You open your stocking Christmas Day, and then all you have to do is wake up and go get it. So I think it was just because they didn't want to wake up so early that they're like, all right, Christmas Eve, whatever, it's okay, go for it.
Hey, it makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, well, I've adopted it. That's what we do. So,
yeah, I mean, it's not a bad deal. I mean, honestly, you know, it's just a difference of hours, and in the grand scheme of things, it doesn't matter. It's about having everybody together, and I can understand the whole during the day thing because it lets other people be able to be there, and you know, we don't have to do it at night. You can technically, like, we did ours like at least all the Christmas stuff, the gifts were like at noon, 2 o'clock. We might eat at like 6 o'clock if some people didn't want to leave beforehand. You know, it's just everybody has their own different things.
Mm-hmm.
So, well, we do have a Monday night game to get to. It was turned out to be very similar to another game the Lions played a couple of weeks ago against the Packers. This was of the same note. The Lions were leading 28-3 at one point, and then the Saints just kept coming back, and lo and behold, they were like within a touchdown, and then the Saints can't stop the Lions from scoring again. They get within a touchdown again, and then when they need a crucial stop, they didn't even get past first down. Joyce Bell just tears it up, gets it to like the 10-yard line, and then the game ends. Even then, Matt Prater misses the field goal that would have, you know, put it out, but they only had 9 seconds left, and not a whole lot you can do from your own 28 with 9 seconds left, but they tried. I mean, it's between two teams where the outcome didn't matter as far as playoffs. I think it really doesn't matter at this point whether that team or this team, I mean, what the players do. It's everything that was being talked about was what we've talked about, it seems like, a gazillion times on here, but I guess we'll just talk about it again, is what's going to happen with Jim Caldwell, what's going to happen with Sean Payton and Drew Brees. You know, another game where Calvin Johnson pretty much is not around. I mean, he has one target. He makes that one target a catch for 19 yards. It was all Golden Tate and the running game between Amir Abdullah and Joyke Bell. I think they had about almost 160 yards between them, almost. Maybe 150. So they both each had a touchdown.
Combined for 148, but both of them really had that one big run that really opened things up for them. But yeah, I mean, the running game looked better for Detroit, and like you said, I mean, in the end of things, the result doesn't really matter here. At least New Orleans made it semi-interesting in the second half. I think we all went into this, like, I think, like, regular football fans went into this going, oh, we're going to have a lot of high-scoring games, and then, you know, us fantasy football players are going, okay, this is where all the action is as far as fantasy points, and I don't think it really, you know, disappointed in that aspect. But it just, this is another game, and we had a lot of them this week, where it just surprises me how few teams can play a full four quarters. I don't know how many teams, even the really good ones this week, would jump out to a big lead in the first half, and you're like, okay, this game's over. And then you look at it again, and the other team's within a score or two. And it's like, how did this happen? So it's just, I don't know, it's maybe they let up and the other team keeps going, or the other team goes and makes that crucial adjustment, or what. But this was just another one of those examples we've had of team blows out the other team in the first half, looks completely dominant, and the next thing you know, we're in a game.
Very true. I mean, but we do have things that concern this podcast. As far as fantasy football is concerned.
Yeah, we don't need to talk about that.
Well, you know. Yeah, I lost. My team just played terribly. Even if I would have started Danny Woodhead, who got 4 touchdowns, it would have done nothing. I think he had Johnson, who did nothing, but he had another player that kind of did okay and would have put it out anyway. So Sean Lewis Sullivan remains the number one seed and remains going to the championship game. And coming into tonight, Randy was winning by like about 18 points, and Golden Tate with his two touchdowns and yards helped Gary become the representative of this podcast to be in the championship game for the F2F Fantasy Football League. And Gary did write out a statement saying, "Me, you know, sometimes fantasy football can give you lemons, Randy, but today mine was nothing but golden tater tots. Great game, and better luck next year." So, any response to that?
I blame Richard Rodgers not giving me a full point. That's what I blame it on. No, I mean, it was a great back and forth. I obviously, with any fantasy matchup, you make a couple decisions that don't work out. Who would have guessed Arizona's defense would go completely ballistic there for about a 10-minute stretch against Philadelphia? And so I had them on the bench. I started the Jets defense. But, I mean, in the same retrospect, Gary was nice enough to let me stay close in this. He started Matt Ryan over Kirk Cousins, who went ballistic and put 45 points up on his bench. So, I mean, as much as I'd like to say I could have made a few moves to beat him, he could have made one move and just made this laughable. So to lose within two, I put up 120 points in the semifinals. I mean, I can't complain about that, but I'll wish Gary good luck to represent this podcast in the finals.
Yeah, I had a similar situation in that I needed Calvin. I got Drew Brees to give me enough points. I needed Calvin Johnson to at least give me like 15 so I could win the 4-1 league matchup and go on to the championship game. And Cook wins again, so it looks like I think Gary wound up getting beat pretty bad. So it'll be Cook and another guy that you guys have no idea who he is. At least I won my matchup beating Brandon in the wrestling fantasy football league, so I did win for the podcast at least. But yeah, I mean, that's what we'll get into more fantasy football stuff as the thing goes on. But honestly, I mean, I think if you're, you know, apparently the Ford family, or at least the principal owner, is fond of Jim Caldwell. And to me, I think if he wins out and the Lions keep playing the way they have, I think you kind of got to bring him back. I mean, he hasn't done anything to make you lose. You make the change, and it works. I mean, he could have appointed anybody to be the offensive coordinator, and he appointed the right guy. So you got to give him credit for that. And their offense certainly has looked a ton better since Jim Bakuter has been there as the coordinator. I mean, the defense has also stepped up, but I think that has to do with the defense always is going to play better when your team has a lead, you know, and when you have leads like the way the Lions have had the past couple of weeks, you know, they're going to let it slip, and it's about holding on. But you think that Caldwell should stay? Does it matter what they do and Caldwell should stay, or do they have to win in these last two games, which, again, are the 49ers and the Bears, two winnable games? Or what do you think?
I don't know. I mean, this season has been a complete loss, so it just feels weird to me to say, well, if they win the next two games and finish 7-9, sure, you should keep it. Detroit just needs a change. Obviously, they've made a ton of changes, you know, during the regular season to see if things work. But
they were a playoff team last year. I mean, they were one penalty call away from possibly playing a divisional opponent. You never know in those games. I mean, does it really change them? I mean, you change everything else. Do you really have to change the coach too?
No, but I don't think that these two games should matter as far as him keeping his job or not. I think if you are the owner, you should have that decision made right now. Now, unless this is, I mean, going whether you're keeping him if he wins the next two games, that shouldn't make any difference. But say they go out these next two games and lose by 40 and the team has just now given up completely on him, then you just get rid of him. But I don't think you should look at this as going, well, he can save it if somehow they win two meaningless games. It's if you think that the changes that you've made during the season are going to work with a full off season of work, then you stick with them if you think the team's around it or not. I don't think you should look at it like, oh, man, you know, if we just beat San Francisco, We'll keep Jim Caldwell around for another season. It just adds a little off to me.
I just don't want to talk. I mean, I know we should because it's really the thing to talk about after the game, but we have talked about the whole Sean Payton and Drew Brees thing to death, honestly. And I just feel like there's really not a whole lot else to say until they make a decision one way or the other as to what they're going to do. I mean, do you agree with me, or is there really something to talk about?
No, I don't think anything's changed. Just, I mean, I'm with you where we've talked it to death all year. I mean, because that's all you can talk about with New Orleans. I mean, they've been a non-story most of the year, so we come up with one with the Sean Payton stuff. So at this point, we're just waiting.
And to be fair, I mean, other people have come up with it, so it's not like we're just blowing smoke and nothing's happening in that vein, but it's just Oh, and I just realized I forgot to do all the switching the picture around and all that stuff. That's always great. Because people that are looking at it on Spreaker are just seeing blank image with our stuff there. That's great. But, yeah, just look, honestly, again, this game doesn't matter, and we're going to talk about things where we might not even talk about the other team because it doesn't matter at this point. And I know people want you to And I know we're going to, after the season's over, we're going to try to make it seem like they matter because we're going to be talking about the offseason. But then in that situation, you're talking about it being the start of another year, as weird as it seems. But that's kind of what it is. So, you know. So don't get upset if we don't talk 10 minutes about your team because most people are not going, we only have a certain amount of time in the show, and most people are not going to care about a team that, you know, isn't going anywhere.
Yeah, and I don't know how many different ways to say Johnny Manziel sucks. So, we can just skip some of this stuff.
All right, so we go on. Of course, I guess we'll just kind of try to cover the games, Gary, we're supposed to cover. I realized at the last minute that I gave Gary an extra game that for some reason I had overlooked and I should have only given him two, but it's whatever. So let's start with our game of the week, which was the Steelers and Broncos, and they made it close all throughout. Technically we have to start with a Saturday night game. So,
well, I understand you're bitter, you're upset.
I'm not bitter about anything. It's whatever. I mean, look, the thing that does upset me is that things we needed to happen happened because Washington winning wouldn't have made a difference because Eagles have to beat Washington if they wanted to do anything. And then, you know, Dallas would have to win out, which with the way the Bills are playing, that's possible. You never know, but it just – they gave it – I'm not mad at them. They did what they could. They had to bring Kellen Moore in, which that's what makes me sad about, you know, those what-ifs about what had happened if we'd brought Kellen Moore in before. And there's been so many fans saying, Kellen Moore, Kellen Moore, Kellen Moore. And it took them way too long to decide that they needed to bring in Kellen Moore.
Yeah, absolutely. And I didn't really get to talk about this that much because I joined the rabble late. Work ran late for me, so I missed the first half. But after the Rabble podcast, I actually went back and rewatched that first half because I wanted to be able to talk about it with you, and I was hoping Gary. But listen, Matt Cassel was terrible. I mean, there was no way to mix words. Like, even if they weren't thinking about switching a quarterback, I mean, with those two interceptions he threw so fast, it was. You had no choice to begin with. And listen, Kellen Moore was okay. Is he going to be a starter?
Yeah, he wasn't. Yeah, he wasn't anything.
There's no threat to Tony Romo's job or anything, but I think Kellen Moore has solidified himself as the backup next year.
And you know how great that is because let's be real. He's coming into next year, he's going to be 27. He'll be a year younger than when Brandon Whedon was drafted. But they brought Brandon Whedon over here when he was like, what, 30, 31? So it's still a better deal, and he's still younger than Romo when Romo was brought in here. So I think it's a good thing, because people have been clamoring, and I agree with them, that because of what happened to Romo this year and because of his injury history, you do need to have a quarterback that's on the younger side that you're developing, that you can say, okay, this is a guy that we bring in. We don't have to go pay a veteran, and we can trust him. He can win us some games like we've seen many backups do, like we've seen Brock Osweiler do, like we saw Landry Jones do, like we saw AJ McCarron do this week. I mean, Michael Vick did it, even though he never looked impressive. He won games, things that Matt Castle and Brandon Weeden could never do, except for the one game that Castle, I don't know if that's with Castle, but either way,
Yeah, and listen, I haven't done the study on it or like done all the research I need to, but I really think we're going to see a lot more backups get more playing time over the next few years because of the concussion rules. I mean, back in the day, 10, 15, 20 years ago, a quarterback would get, knocked around and they just throw him back out there because he's our quarterback. We need him. We need him. We need him. Well, now they have to go through a protocol. So how many times this year have we seen a quarterback miss a week or two because of concussions that they would have been out there otherwise? So having a solid backup is almost as important as having a backup running back these days, because sure, he may only see the field in two games that year. I mean, hopefully, you're hoping zero, but I mean, he may see two games, but those are two very crucial games with how close some of these playoff races are. If you throw in a backup, like if Pittsburgh only could stick with Mike Vick and are now looking up at all these teams and basically out of the playoffs compared to when Landry Jones was able to fill in and give him a couple victories. I mean, it's crucial to have that backup.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, you just said it. This year has proven you can no longer just have, some of the guys, the Patriots have that issue and some other ones that still, this is going to be funny next year. How many teams, if that affects them at all, to go look for a Packer quarterback that's actually pretty decent, because, I don't know that you can have like a Ryan Nassib back there or a guy that's, you've never even heard of anymore playing behind someone, and oh, he gets hurt. Oh, well, crap. What do we do now? So that's going to be an interesting scenario coming into the off season if that is an issue for anyone looking into, if more quarterbacks get drafted for that reason, if anything else. And that's another thing too, why some of these third round QBs that never played, like a Brett Hundley or Bryce Petty and all that, at least they got that year to learn. So
yeah, absolutely.
That's another thing to look at there. And I mean, honestly, look, neither that team, that game was not glamorous at all. It was very defensive heavy if you liked defensive games. Cowboys had opportunities when Kellen Moore was in there, but he was throwing too many interceptions, and the offense moved, but Jets defense is great for a reason, and even Fitzpatrick didn't look all that great. He had he broke his nose. Brandon Marshall had to go into the locker room for cramps at one point.
This game definitely reminded me of those 2 years that the Jets were able to make the AFC Championship. The early Rex Ryan years with Mark Sanchez, where they were just gutting their way through victories, like winning these 19-16 games where it wasn't pretty and nobody came out of it going, oh man, the Jets, that's a scary team right there. But, they're getting the W's. I mean, they're sitting at 9-5. Right now they can't control their own destiny, which is driving me nuts. I mean, who would have thought, we could see an 11-5 team not make the playoffs if things work out that way. I mean, it very well could, other than the fact that the Jets would then have to beat the Patriots next week to make that happen. But I mean, that's neither here nor there. But sitting there at 9-5 and not controlling your own destiny is a little weird. But I mean, this is what the Jets used to do when they're able to go on their little mini playoff run. So it's nice to see that, you know, they can still do that, but now they have the weapons like a Brandon Marshall or an Eric Decker that can make that big play late to finish off some of these games.
Certainly. So let's move on now to the game we were talking about before we got really into this. Broncos and Steelers, really close. A game where Roethlisberger threw everything at Antonio Brown. He caught everything that Roethlisberger threw at him. Oswald even ran it in for a touchdown. It was close for a large portion of it. And then the Steelers just came up with the win. I mean, so it's something we said could happen, and we had Peyton Manning there on the sideline, and now Gary Kubiak is talking about going back to square one with the quarterbacks, even though he says he sort of favors Brock Osweiler still. Do you think this is even a question?
Well, it's definitely a question, and it's a tough one to answer. Listen, Brock Osweiler looks really good in that first half. It really looked like Denver was just going to take complete control and put Pittsburgh away. But I think Mike Tomlin just needs to look at Big Ben right at the beginning of the game and go, hey, we're down 21-0. Go have fun. Because the moment, you know, he can just start going crazy, like they completely gave up on the running game. He throws the ball 55 times. He targets Antonio Brown 18 times, and they connect on 16 of them. I mean, he throws 10 other receptions to Martavius Bryant. I mean, he's just slinging the ball all over the place, and he's the scariest person to just have drop back when, you know, he can just sling it around. He's so fun to watch, but, I mean, just carving up that Denver defense. But back to your question, Brock Osweiler definitely wilted under that pressure. He started out so strong. He ends up with 3 touchdowns. But the moment Pittsburgh starts mounting their comeback and getting back into the game, Brock Osweiler disappeared. Like, he turned into that young quarterback that he is. So now you're sitting in a situation, if you're Denver, where you get Cincinnati next week, who looked pretty darn good with A.J. McCarron. You know, they got the job done. And if you lose that game, all of a sudden, not only are you in very high risk of losing the division to Kansas City, if the Jets can somehow upset New England, there's a decent chance you're going to miss the postseason. So it's no longer, okay, well, we'll just hold off Peyton Manning until he's 100%. Now it's, who do you trust more, Peyton Manning at like 60% or a Brock Osweiler who wilts under pressure?
Yeah, and that's the thing. And then, you know, I looked at the stat today where Peyton Manning is still leading the league in interceptions. And he hasn't played in how long now?
It's been a while. That's rough. I did not see that stat. That's terrible.
It's by like 2 or 3 over. I mean, Andrew Luck was like 5th on that list. You know, he hasn't played in a while. And, you know, at least the quarterbacks that are playing aren't throwing a zillion picks. So, but either, I mean, that's an issue for him that he has to think about. And it's also just now you have to go back to running that mixture of your offense and Peyton Manning. You can't run the offense you want to run because we've already seen that it doesn't work for Manning. So that's something else that Gary Kubiak has to deal with, in that it's not what he wants to do. So, you know, that's something you also have to think about if you're Gary Kubiak at all.
Yeah, it's a very difficult situation to be in right now.
And, I mean, I guess we don't have to do it now. I mean, we can, let's just be fair and wait till Wednesday and see if we learn anything else. I think it's kind of unfair for us to make the, you never know, somebody could have a bad day of practice and that changes things and whatever. But looking for the Steelers now, they're playing, what, the Ravens and Browns.
Yep.
They should win out and get a wild card spot, right? I mean, they pretty much went through their last trial here.
Yeah, trust me, watching this game, I was rooting for Denver at the time because I hadn't broken down this new scenario for my Jets. But knowing that Pittsburgh was beating Denver and looking at it like, well, they're not losing to Cleveland or Baltimore. I mean, even if the Jets can win out. So I think the Steelers get in probably as the sixth seed, maybe as a fifth seed, depending on how Denver does. But I don't see Kansas City, who we'll talk about later, or Pittsburgh losing out. And I'm sorry, but if you face Pittsburgh in that first round, you're in for a world of hurt. Because this team might actually be the favorites in the AFC right now.
It's just crazy that, you know, the Steelers went through all that stuff with three different quarterbacks and all that, and they're still able to do it, you know. But, yeah, now you have a fresh and healthy Big Ben for the playoffs. I mean, this team could get hot at the right time, and you never know. Watch out. Yes. Everybody else they're playing. So moving on to a team that, again, might have gone through their last trial here in the New York Giants, who we discussed whether it was going to be one of those games, and it almost wasn't. I mean, it was the Panthers absolutely dominated the Giants for a large portion of that game, 35-7 the score at one point. And then all of a sudden, again, very much like the Monday night game that was going on, Giants just kept firing away, firing away, firing away. Beckham got a ridiculous touchdown to tie the game up. And then Panthers, with 1:46 left, run down the field and get the field goal. Now, the other big storyline going on from this game is that Odell Beckham has been suspended for a game because him and Josh Norman just kept getting into it, fist flying. The referees did not want to eject anyone, which I think that was a stupid call. Need to eject players if it's getting like that. I mean, this was like a wrestling match going on. Or like an MMA fight going on between these two. Like, it was just, it was ridiculous. You know?
Yeah, it's so weird. I've watched a ton of college football, obviously, and, you know, they have that headhunter rule where even if unpurposefully, you know, you go after the head of a player, you're instantly ejected. I mean, they go through and they review it and stuff. How they do not go back and look at Odell Beckham leading with his head to go after Norman, you know, outside of the aspect of a play, was just ridiculous to me. I think he should have been ejected instantly, if not before that. I'm with you. I thought both Beckham and Norman should have been ejected. It was like going back to the Saturday game with the Cowboys and Jets, where we saw Dez Bryant and Darrell Revis. We noted it a few times where they were just drawn back and forth. But that's all it stayed to, was a lot of trash talk. Maybe a little push here and there, you know, just having fun, you know, mano a mano type stuff. And this was like to a whole different level. Like it crossed that line so early on that, you know, they let it go for too long. So then it escalated and then they started throwing flags. But at that point, it was too much. I mean, they're already too far gone. The only thing that saved both of these players, I think, was halftime, where they could, you know, go off the field for a little bit and have their teammates, like, sit them down and go, dude, what the hell? I mean, especially for Odell Beckham's side, where, you know, they were able to sit him and go, you're killing us right now. It's like, you keep marching us backwards when we need to go forwards.
Yeah, it just, exactly. And I, the team itself, and this is where, you know, again, Tom Coughlin's going to come under fire for this kind of thing of, hey, like, I understand this is your star, and you need him to be playing constantly and all this, but you've got to sit him down and be like, cool it, man. You can't go out here and be having fist fights with this dude. Even if he gets in your head, and we saw it in the Bills game where the Bills apparently got to Odell Beckham, and this became a storyline throughout the season that was kind of underlined. It wasn't something that every team did, but there were some teams that would do it, try to rattle him. And you know, the Vikings got some guys that they're going to play, you know, on Sunday, and that they would be perfect for that kind of thing if, you know, we were talking about something like Beckham playing, but he's appealing it. I don't think he's going to win the appeal. There's a possibility that because he's appealing, he might get Josh Norman also suspended, which would hurt the Panthers. But, you know, I don't see how this is going to really help him at all. If you let this go by, if you're Roger Goodell, I think it totally kills anything else you've been trying to promote with the league.
No, absolutely. I mean, I've heard this discussion several times a day. It was, you know, the main topic that basically if a defensive player, if Josh Norman did that to Odell Beckham Jr., he would be suspended for the rest of the season. I mean, just the way Roger Goodell has worked. So to not punish Odell Beckham at all would have been the wrong message. And really the way I look at it, even if Odell Beckham, you know, he is appealing, but say his appeal helps get Josh Norman into more trouble and they suspend him a game. I mean, sure, it might hurt their 16-0 season hunt, but I mean, really, it just gives him an excuse to rest the star. For the
honestly,
playoff.
Josh Norman could make it a problem for Julio Jones next week, but I just don't see it. Like, I don't see the Falcons' defense stopping Cam Newton. After this game, 100 yards rushing, 5 touchdowns. I mean, he was sacked 3 times, but still, like...
Yeah, and out of those 100 yards rushing, that rush he had to get them into much better field goal range right there at the end was such a crucial play and a great heads-up of getting out of the pocket at the right time and seeing that he had enough room to make the play and doing what he does best and making that play. Just, I watched a lot of this game just because, you know, they are going for 14-0 and, you know, watching the red zone. This was like one of the last early games that was going on, so they stayed to this game a lot. And never at any point did I go, oh my God, Carolina is going to lose this game. Like, even though the Giants came all the way back and tied this game up at 35, you look down at the clock with over a minute left and went, oh, Cam's got this.
Yeah, and even then, you know, you still got overtime if that happens because you just didn't feel like it was going to happen for him. But, I mean, you know, for the positives on the Giants, they finally get a 100-yard rusher. Jennings goes 107 for a touchdown. I mean, and everybody was worried about Jonathan Stewart not being there. I remember Gary making that a point. No big deal, you know. So, I mean, Ted Ginn keeps performing. Another 2 touchdown game for him. Greg Olsen gets another one. So, just crazy how the Panthers just keep rolling. And I don't see it stopping here. I think the next 2 might be divisional games, but if they don't win out, it's almost a shame at this point. With all the stuff that they've, the way they've dominated opponents, the way that they've won these close games, come from behind, just it's been a thrilling thing to watch the Panthers all year. And I just hope to see it go through to the playoffs. So, I mean, and the way that, even if I don't think they have it yet. I think because the Cardinals won, technically the Panthers have to win one more.
Yeah, they have to win one more to be the number one overall seed.
But it's crazy how I just don't see it happening though. But it's crazy how they could lose the next 2 and still not be the number one seed. But
Either need to win one or have Arizona lose one, and Arizona does have Green Bay and Seattle the last 2. So
yeah,
I think they're pretty safe to be the number one seed.
Even though they're playing Green Bay to basically get the number 2 seed, so they'll definitely have their starters in that one. Now the Seahawks game, who knows? Even though it doesn't look like anybody's going to be able to come, and nobody's coming to knock the Seahawks or the Vikings out, so who knows? They might rest people for that game. Let's see. Gary also had the Titans and Patriots. Patriots pretty much just ran them over. Mariota got hurt.
Yeah, that's the only news out of this game is Mariota's done for the year.
Not that I believe.
No, I mean, those 2 extra games, and it doesn't look like it's so serious that it's going to affect him in the offseason. But
I mean, it affects the divisional. You know, it affects the Texans and Colts because now when Houston plays Tennessee next week, they don't have to play against Marcus Mariota. They get to play against Mettenberger, and that's a whole different scenario. And the same thing with the Colts when they play Tennessee in week 17. You know, so Houston's going to have to make sure that they beat the Jaguars on, you know, on it, because it was weird until they officially had knocked out the Jaguars. There was a way where if the Jaguars won their next two and the other two lost out, that they'd all wind up with 3-3 in the division, and it would come down to something else, like, I guess, conference record or something like that. And that's, I think, where the Jaguars would lose out. But it's just crazy how that's still a thing that's going on. But honestly, I mean, yeah.
Patriots took care of business. I think the only other news is here is Patriots once again destroy any hope of fantasy players that want to rely on their running game, as everyone thinks Brandon Bolden or James White are going to be the guy, and Joey Issefa, I guess, is the leading rusher on the team.
And they just signed Steven Jackson.
Just because it's the Patriots.
So. Yeah, just because they can. I don't know that he's going to figure, but he is a guy that can catch the ball in the backfield. He can rush if they deem him, you know, necessary for that. So, interesting. Interesting decision there by the Patriots. It's something else that was interesting for all the wrong reasons. The Houston Texans and Indianapolis Colts. TJ Yates gets knocked out of the game. Brian Hoyer is now going under concussion protocol because TJ Yates tears his ACL. He's done for the year, done for a long while. And then Matt Hasselbeck goes out of the game as well, and it's Charlie Whitehurst and Brandon freaking Whedon to decide who's going to be leading the AFC South. Houston winds up holding on 16-10. Hasselbeck did look good early on. I mean, TJ Yates is kind of holding the fort down, but man, it's crazy.
Yeah.
It came down to them.
What a mess of a game. What a mess of a division. I guess it's just apropos that the AFC South gets decided basically between Brandon Whedon and Charlie Whitehurst, right? Just
yeah. It's
an
so
ugly,
appropriate for
it really
the way
is.
This division has gone. That's
so I mean, a long ways to go here, but do you think Houston just won it here? Won the division?
I think so. Everybody was saying it was a championship game. And yes, again, the Jaguars could play spoiler at the end. But
Jaguars
just,
still not officially eliminated, by the way.
They're not. Okay. Oh. Well, again, that scenario I just said is probably the way they're going to get in. I just, now without Mariota, I don't see Houston losing. So the Jaguars will get knocked out next week. Now, I know the Colts are not playing divisional opponent. They're playing somebody else that I can't think of right this second.
They're going to win. They get Miami, who has just given up on the year.
Yeah, it's true. But I don't know. Charlie Whitehurst is not a guy. They already said Andrew Luck's not playing. That Dolphins defense, still nobody. I don't want Ndamukong Suh and Olivier Vernon running at me if I'm Charlie Whitehurst. That's still possibly a loss. You know, you're right in the fact that the Dolphins. But, you know, let's be fair. That game had a lot riding on it from an emotional perspective for the Chargers. Eric Weddle even went after the game and laid down in the stadium and took pictures and all this stuff. I mean, I think that shows it meant a lot to those guys to make sure they won, even though, you know, most of the fans didn't give a flying crap. But to the players, it meant a lot to win.
Can that count as our review of that game?
Yeah, we can, because I really don't feel like talking about most of it.
Woodhead was amazing.
Yeah, Woodhead was awesome. Four touchdowns. Philip Rivers was fine. I mean, the Dolphins just were terrible. And like you said, it looked like they just didn't care. Yeah. Now, I don't know if the next game changes for them, but, you know, whatever. Browns and Seahawks, I mean, Randy, it just another Seahawks mauling, right?
Hold on just a second, because from my recollection, Cleveland started the game on a 15-play drive and scored a touchdown, and we're leading 7-0, and then I turned the TV off. So you're trying to tell me that Cleveland didn't win this game?
Nope. They did not.
They turned the game off. I mean, because then it just went back to Seattle as normal. Russell Wilson has been phenomenal the last 2 months. He continues that now. He is now the first quarterback ever, 6 straight games of at least 3 touchdowns and no interceptions. So congratulations to Russell Wilson. Johnny Manziel just looks lost still. I mean, he does really good that first drive, completely falls apart. And welcome back Christian Michael to the team, getting the bulk of the carries. And listen, Seattle just completely dominated like I think we all thought it would. I have to ask you, Sean, because Seattle has the history of beating New Orleans when they were a 7-9 division winner, even though Seattle's completely rolling right now. Do you think they should be worried about traveling to an NFC East team? Which it most likely will happen. It looks like Seattle will probably get the 5 seed. I mean, things can change around a little bit. But say they get the 5 seed and they travel to an NFC East team.
They're getting the 5 seed because of who they're playing. I think they play another cupcake of a team next week or this week coming, right? It's not until they play the Cardinals.
They get
Rams, Cardinals. But
yeah,
you know.
But so say they get the 5 seed. Should they be nervous?
And no.
Should they be?
Washington does play really well at home, so that's one thing you do need to factor in. You won't be at, but honestly, they haven't been that great in CenturyLink this year, so. You know, if it's Washington, I'm worried because they do bring it at home. That's what they did against the Bills. You know, the Cowboys was a division opponent. That's just kind of a thing. But I just think that is one thing you have to worry about. You do have to worry about that. But Kirk Cousins is a guy that we've seen. Washington has problems with the pass rush. Seahawks are the team that will kill you that way. It's just so hard for me to see that Washington just outplays Seattle like that, even if it's at home. You do have to take them seriously.
And actually, you just brought up a really good point that I forgot to mention. The other thing I really noticed about this game that I watched was to face Seattle's defense, you need all week, like if you're the quarterback and you're facing Seattle all week, don't worry about schemes. Don't worry about plays. Just get your hard count down. Because I don't know how many times Seattle, even just dominating this game, would just jump off sides. Like they're so eager to get off that line that if you just get in timing with your center where you can make that hard count and then wait half a second and then snap the ball, you're going to get them every time. I saw them jump off 6 or 7 times on Johnny Manziel, who I would not call the best at a hard count. So it's something Seattle's definitely going to have to work on these next 2 weeks. But obviously Gary's not here, you know, not feeling well, but I did post him the question that I wanted to ask him fantasy-wise, where if with championships coming up, if Christian Michael was one of those sneaky championship plays, and he said no. He is worried a little bit about the Rams defense. Michael gets 84 yards, but it is against the crappy Browns team, so he says stay away. I mean, unless you're desperate.
You know, I will say that it depends on the way that the Rams come out also. Doug Martin was doing just fine against the Rams until Tampa Bay got behind. So that's not necessarily always true. It just depends on your scheme. Seattle is very oriented towards the run still. Doesn't matter who's we saw Thomas Rawls go out there and kick some butt for how many weeks until he got injured. I don't necessarily think it's a total – if you got nobody and Christian Michael's the only guy that's viable sitting there, start Christian Michael because at this point, you got to remember, even though it's a divisional game, the Rams aren't playing for anything. So, you know, I still think that because of the way Seattle does their offense, Christian Michael – I'm not saying you start him over a bunch of people. Just like you said, if you got nobody, if you're in one of those deep leagues and one of your guys got hurt or you don't know about this guy, you kind of been questionably starting him, you know, you can get something out of Christian Michael, I think. But, yeah, I mean, we talked about Dolphins and Chargers. There really isn't a whole lot to say about that other than that. Randy, I mean, Cincinnati with A.J. McCarron went out there and they looked pretty good.
Yeah, listen, I think they're going to be okay with A.J. McCarron. He looked decent enough. I mean, he was definitely in game manager mode, which was fine. But listen, they jump out 21-0. They scored 21 points in the second quarter, and that was the game. I mean, the game's over. Sure, San Francisco scores a couple times in the second half. They only lose by 10, 24-14. But I got nothing else in this game. But one thing that I have to ask you, Sean, and that's the running game. You know, the running game, we went into this year thinking it was going to be just this two-headed monster. They were going to run all over opponents with Bernard and Hill. Starts off the year, and Bernard that is doing his part. Hill really wasn't. And then we saw Hill the last couple weeks do a bit better. Hill does score two touchdowns here, but one of his touchdowns, it took him three attempts to get 1 yard. And it shows here as those two combined for 33 carries for just 64 yards. So as a team averaging 1.9 yards a carry, are you worried about the running game struggling now? Or do you think it was just that the 49ers completely went all in on the run knowing that they were playing A.J. McCarron?
Exactly what you said. I think it's they focused. We got to make it hard for him. Don't make it easy for him. So take away the guys that are going to allow him to get it out there to A.J. Green and Marvin Jones and all those other guys. Tal Afford was out. But, you know, to me, that's exactly what it was. Now, let's be honest, you know, this running game hasn't been great all the time either. And 49ers defense is kind of okay. They're not, you know, the freaking leakage that is the Browns defense. So, you know, I think it's more of a we're trying to shut it down for McCarron.
Yeah, so I'll just take that to the next step. And, you know, A.J. McCarron, again, he played pretty well. 15 of 21, 192. He does throw the one touchdown to Laura Croft's brother, Tyler. But, I mean, he doesn't go out there and he doesn't, like, really impress me as far as, like, being a starting quarterback. But do you think they loosen the leash a little bit, let him throw it around a little bit more? I mean, I know they're playing Denver next week, and that is a complete 30 steps up from San Francisco. But do you think they loosen that leash and see what he can do?
I think they have to. If you play game manager mode against the Broncos defense, you're in for a bunch of interceptions, and you got to let him go in there, have some confidence to take some opportunities. Because if you're – it's just you're asking for too much trouble against a defense that's so smart. They can come at you in so many different ways. They've got corners that are terrific. I mean, you know, even if DeMarcus Ware doesn't play or does play, depending on his back issue, just there's too much there. If you go and let's say we're only going to do kind of what we did against the Steelers or the 49ers, they're going to look at that tape. You got to give them something else to look at. And the only way you're going to be able to do that is to say, okay, McCarron, here's some different stuff. We have some trust in you. So, Yeah, I mean, Gary doesn't think that there's a lot of trust there, but who knows? And he obviously, look, if you're trying to start AJ McCarron for your championship, I'm sorry.
Yeah, no jokes.
But I mean, it's possible. I guess if you were starting Marcus Mariota or something, and he's the only guy around, you know, then you don't have options. But you know, and maybe if you're in that consolation bracket, I guess go after him. I don't know. But it's, Gary's other game that we had was the Packers and Raiders. I was going to watch it. I didn't have time, but it was just the Packers doing what they had to do. I mean, Demarius Randall ran back a touchdown. Aaron Rodgers was throwing it around. I mean, the Packers have just looked good. They've looked good ever since. Now, look, against the Cowboys, they had their times where they were just, to me, it just kind of felt like they were playing around with the Cowboys. They knew the Cowboys weren't going to do anything because of Matt Castle, and they just said, okay, well, we gave you too many opportunities. You didn't do anything. Let's just run it down your throat, and they just kept doing it. So I think that's an outlier. I think ever since that Lions game and McCarthy took over the plays, they've figured out that, okay, this is what we do. We do it well. At least the Raiders came back, and Amari Cooper was once again a force. But you can't be throwing interceptions. It doesn't matter if it's earlier or whenever. You know, you just can't be doing what Derek Carr was doing. Something we're going to tell Blake Bortles later. Just, you can't put your team in a hole. You're down 14-0 to the Packers.
And that's what I was going to say. I actually give kind of credit to Oakland for getting back in this. I mean, I got to watch the about the first quarter of this game before I had a work meeting I had to go to, so I can't tell you really what happened the rest. But I watched Derek Carr throw two interceptions early, one that got returned back till about the one, and then on the next drive he threw a pick six. So at that point, like, as I'm going to this work meeting, I'm going, well, Green Bay is going to blow this team out. And when I got back home, you know, my girlfriend is sitting on the couch nervous because Oakland's still in this game in the fourth quarter. So, I mean, I would need to go back and still watch this game. But I got to say, I mean, for Oakland to come back and make it tight, and, you know, Amari Cooper finding a way to be involved, which he was not at all last week. Eddie Lacy only getting 2 yards of carry. So was that just a flash in the pan that we saw for a couple weeks? I mean, there's still a lot of questions with Green Bay that need to be answered pretty quick.
Yeah, and again, you know, Derek Carr helped them a lot in that first quarter. They had to come back into it, and then, you know, the Packers just kind of did their thing. They were able to have, like, a 19-play drive or whatever it was, and it's just like, wow, it's absolutely nuts. James Jones gets like a 30-yard touchdown. Hey, at least Amari Cooper got over 1,000 yards. Great for him. Great to be a rookie. It's the first time since 2005 Randy Moss did that. So apparently that's the longest drought in the NFL. I had no idea that was that long of a drought of 10 years for the Raiders not to get a 1,000-yard receiver. But there you go. They have done it now. So Raiders are officially eliminated now. They can still mess around and play spoiler to the Chiefs in the last game of the season, though, which would be their last game in Oakland. So they'll have their goodbye ceremony there against the Chiefs, and you never know.
Well, can we stop with these goodbye ceremonies? Not all three of you are going to L.A. I know you all want to. And
San Luis is not I'm telling you right now, I think it's San Diego and Oakland going.
Yeah, St. Louis looks like they're getting a new stadium out of it, which is good on them. But it's like all these people are having all these goodbye ceremonies, and I was like, come on, calm down. just hold up a little bit.
The Oakland one I can kind of understand, though. People actually care about that one, even though I'm sure they'll be glad to get out of the playing on the baseball field and all that when, you know, the A's are still playing.
Listen, I'm sure the football players are going to act all sad. but you do not want to be playing on the baseball field. Just, I bet they're praying, please, anywhere but here right now. I mean, nothing against Oakland, but they're playing on a baseball field.
Yeah, you're right. So, well, yeah, so that pretty much does it for that. Listen, Buffalo's defense was terrible.
Yes.
And Washington just absolutely, Kirk Cousins went crazy. I mean,
just,
is there something else to it than that?
I'll just ask you this real quick. Did Rex Ryan make this defense worse? This defense was good last year.
There's no answer to this other than he must have, because what the hell? I mean,
so I remember earlier this year that the players were complaining about his system, so he changed up the system and is worse.
I still think he's just an absolutely horrendous in-game coach. Like, he just doesn't know what to do when you get into the actual game itself, to how to make adjustments to Washington just absolutely mauling you at all times. Like, oh, I don't know. I don't know.
And just two quick notes on Buffalo, because, I mean, their season's over, but Sammy Watkins and Tyrod Taylor have got the bromance going. I see Sammy Watkins as a top 10 fantasy wide receiver next year. I mean, Gary's our fantasy guy, but I think he'd probably agree with me. I mean, he goes 111 yards, two touchdowns late in junk time.
Barring injury, of course.
Well, of course. And LeSean McCoy, speaking of injury, left the game with a minor MCL sprain. I really don't see the point of bringing him back the next 2 weeks. Really, if you're Buffalo, your season's over. Just go ahead and rest him. But I just want to get really quick to the Washington side, because this is interesting, especially just the way they play at home is ridiculous. But now they're done at home, so, I mean, it's going to be tough for them. But I have a question for you, Sean, and it's going to be an easy one because obviously it's about who we're talking about. But who has the highest completion percentage in the NFL this season?
Kirk Cousins.
And he goes out there and throws four touchdowns, no interceptions, 22 of 28.
Didn't he run for one?
He did run for one on a play that was like, it wasn't even like a 1 yard run. It was, what was it? A 13 yard run. And he made a couple moves and made people miss to score. He looked like RG3 almost. I mean, needless to say. So for somebody that went into the offseason thinking he was the backup, to now being, you know, the most accurate quarterback in the NFL, not really, but the stats say it is right now, has he earned a contract extension?
Yes.
And if so, if you're Washington, what are you offering him?
I like Gary's idea here with the 3-year deal with incentives. I don't think you can don't go crazy and give him no max deal, whatever. You're still talking about a 7-7 Washington Redskins team that, if you're going by all the stats and all the stuff, you should be winning this division by a lot more than that. And there's still a possibility that they go in and play Philadelphia and they lose. There's still a possibility that they go into Dallas and they lose.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not a done deal. Those are divisional opponents that they've had problems with this year. You know, they almost had the Giants come back on them. So, I think you need to be very weary also of, maybe he does deserve the extension because of what he's done, but you got to see how he finishes it out, because if you are the team, and look, the Eagles and Giants are not eliminated here. So, you know, if you lose and Dallas, if you lose and you lose to Dallas, that means the winner of the Giants and Eagles, they go. So that's the thing. You know, Washington has to go in there and they have to win that game against Philadelphia. If they win that game against Philadelphia, then I think he's earned it. If they don't, and you're going into a last ditch game against Dallas, you got problems there. Because your team should have been able to go in and win games that they need to when they need, because how the hell are you going to even pretend to try to beat a Seattle team You can't go and beat these teams to get into the playoffs. So that's just my two cents on it. But I think the way he's played, he deserves it. You know. But let's go on to another player that I don't think anybody would have thought of getting five touchdowns. Teddy Bridgewater, somebody that I've talked about many times on here, is he's got issues passing the ball. And all this stuff, and he runs for one and gets four touchdowns passing, two of them to Stephon Diggs. Adrian Peterson actually doesn't play that much because Jerry McKinnon came out of nowhere and had a bunch of long passing runs. He would catch the ball and he'd run for about 30 yards, 20 yards. He got a touchdown on one of them. He kind of allowed Peterson to really just rest. Peterson had a couple of decent runs, but he never had anything where he broke one out or whatever. So the Bears kind of honed in on him. And then they kind of left Bridgewater a lot of time to sit there and go and kind of pick him apart and do what he wanted. And, you know, so that's my question here is, do you think the Vikings have found their pass offense or the Bears defense just this bad?
I think it's a little bit of each column. I think this game was more of, I mean, Minnesota came in here with a purpose and things started going their way and you could just see the confidence in their faces and how, I mean, it just improved as the game went on and, I mean, just it seemed easy to them. It was never any, like, tight windows. It was just finding the perfect spots and just they were a lot more confident as this game went on. So it was, have they found it? It's tough to say because again, it is Chicago. But you know, I think they believe they found it and that is more important than anything really.
Yes, exactly. That's what matters is right now. That's all you need is to feel like you've got it. You're going to go into another defense that isn't particularly great about stopping anything in the Giants here. And it's another week for you to hone in and see if you can get that. And then you got to play the Packers, and that's, you know, they're also not the greatest against the pass. So you want to – last time, what did we talk about? That they played the Packers, they came and pressured them, and Bridgewater looked – he looked good when he was allowed to have time to pass, but – if the offensive line can't hold the defense, you know, that's an issue. But we'll have to see going forward if they have or not. What do you think the Bears' biggest issue is on defense? Because they don't really have a pass rush. They have a few guys that are decent, you know, Pernell McPhee, some other guys. But a lot of just dudes here that you don't even hear from. And it seems like they really can't stop hardly anything.
I think it's just karma for them not re-signing Brian Urlacher a couple years ago.
No, I think to that, huh?
No, I honestly, I think it. Listen, they're going to get it figured out. John Fox is a good defensive mind, and I just don't think he has the pieces in place for what he wants to do right now. It's a contrast of game plan and talent. And I think you give it a couple of years and he can move these pieces out and put in pieces that will work for him. And the defense will be back to, you know, normal Chicago defense. It's just one of those conflicting styles going on right now in Chicago.
Yeah. So, I mean, the Kansas City Chiefs went in and took care of business against the Ravens. Anything else?
Yeah, no surprise here. The only thing I want to bring up in this game at all really is Kamar Aiken on a fantasy aspect is still – he's the man in Baltimore. He may still be available in some small leagues. I made the mistake in one of my leagues. I was in the semifinals of benching him and starting T.Y. Hilton. And I started Randall Cobb and T.Y. Hilton over Kamar Aiken and Tyler Lockett. And cost myself like 30 points, was still able to sneak out the victory and will be fixing that mistake next week. But he's definitely solid. But listen, Kansas City takes care of business. It's a very boring game. They just do what they do best of just controlling the ball, playing great defense. Marcus Peters gets two interceptions in the fourth quarter. One, he returns for a touchdown that completely seals any idea of a Baltimore comeback, but that's all you got. Kansas City's good. Baltimore sucks. One question, I guess. We've been talking about the Denver situation as far as that goes. So just give me your – rate the Chiefs' chances to win the division on a scale of 1 to 10 for me.
I think that last game against the Raiders is going to be rough, whereas that last game against the Chargers for the Broncos, maybe not so. Obviously, Broncos got a tougher matchup here, but – I'll give him a 5. At the end of the day, I just don't see it. It's possible. But. So Jacksonville, who's technically not eliminated yet, against the Atlanta Falcons, who technically are not eliminated yet either. Atlanta breaks their 6-game losing streak here against the Jaguars. They did get a field goal that really shouldn't have been given to them. The referee apparently cannot count when he looks at the clock back when he's watching the... There, it's clearly evident that it stayed on 4 seconds too long, and if you sit there and break down the time that it should have taken, that should have taken it down to 0, and they shouldn't have got that field goal at the end of the half that made it 17-3 instead of 14-3. But either way, the Jaguars still screwed up. Bortles shouldn't have thrown the interception that led to the field goal being able to happen. That's also where maybe if you had T.J. Yeldon, you would have thought about running it. But, you know, you had Denard Robinson, and it wasn't until after that he started looking pretty decent. Bortles also got strip sacked twice, but, his teammates recovered it. But one of the times he got strip sacked all the way back at the 10-yard line and lost, like, 20 yards. And then on the final drive, he overthrew Allen Hurns, and he was open. And it was just like, it was a bunch of errors by Blake Bortles, stuff we've seen all year. And that to me, I mean, look, Allen Robinson still got him a touchdown. Julius Thomas looked pretty good. I mean, I think if he's healthy the rest of the season and going into the next offseason, I mean, he's definitely going to be a guy that you're going to want to pick up in fantasy when you look at those drafts or whatever. But I think, I know what Gary can say all he wants here, but to me, the Jaguars have lost more games, and I get the defense is bad, but the Jaguars have lost more games because Bortles has made mistakes at the wrong time. And that, to me, is the number one thing that they got. They've got to get into Bortles' head that, hey, you got to be smarter. You've got to be smarter. Like, this is almost like a Saints situation. You know what you got with that defense. I think Dante Fowler can maybe help a little bit. But I don't know. I mean, maybe you pick up some guys in the draft, pick up some guys in free agency, it might help. But if that defense can be as good as you want it to be, but if Bortles is still making mistakes next year, they're not going to go anywhere, right? I mean,
But to me, I think it's because of the defense that Bortles is making as many mistakes. I'm not saying a better defense and he makes none, but I feel he thinks it's all on him. So now he's forcing things. It's more of a, I have to win this game, so I'm going to force this throw because I have to win this game for my team. And, then he makes the mistakes. I think if he felt any confidence in his defense, it's one of the worst in the league. He would be able to loosen up a little bit.
Not at creating turnovers, but almost in any other way, yes.
But and in this game, listen, I mean, they don't have T.J. Yeldon, like you said. Denard Robinson looks okay, but, I mean, suffers a left foot sprain, so we'll see how that goes. But there was no running game at all.
And it was still the whole Julio Jones and Matt Ryan show. Yeah. For the most part, Roddy White made some key catches, and Devontae Freeman kind of was decent in the pass game. He still hasn't seemed to find his legs running, which might be an issue if they even want to sniff the playoffs, and it's going to be an issue for the next game. Do you think that this gives them any confidence they finally broke the streak to go in at home against the Panthers?
Yeah, I think they have a lot of confidence, whether it's misplaced or not. I mean, that's up to for debate. But listen, they got up. They finally broke that schneid. They finally got another win, whether it's whatever you think of Jacksonville or Blake Bortles. They went into Jacksonville, who still has a shot at the playoffs, and got a road victory, something they haven't done in 2 months. And now they go home to face Carolina and, you know, get surrounded by that entire fan base looking for them to snap the streak. I mean, that's their season right now. Sure, they are still, quote-unquote, still eligible to somehow make the playoffs, but it's not happening. But their main goal, they will come out of this season thinking super highly of themselves. If they go in and they beat Carolina and they give them their first loss, and it also makes them guaranteed at least 8-8 this season.
Well, I will have to see when we get down to making those picks if that changes anybody's thought there. But the last game we got to cover is a Sunday Night Football game, and the Cardinals really just went in there to Lincoln Financial Field, and you wouldn't have thought the Eagles were at home at all. The Cardinals just took them out, obliterated them. I don't know. Do you see this? Like, what happened to the Eagles here? I don't know.
Just the Cardinals are so good. It's just ridiculous. I mean, I think the NFC, like the AFC to me, playoff wise, is so interesting because so many of the top teams are banged up. So then you look down at like the Kansas Cities and Pittsburghs and go, they really have a shot. In the NFC, it's Carolina, Arizona, and Seattle. Everyone else, get out. It's a three team race to me right now. I mean, Green Bay is decent, but I don't think they're to this level. And Arizona just went out and proved that they don't care who you are or where they're at. They're just going to stomp you into the ground. And David Johnson, welcome to your coming out party, because holy crap, did he just go out and just dominate this entire game? I have a buddy of mine who was in the semifinals and was down 3 points or whatever, and said he had David Johnson versus, I think, Jordan, or who was it? A Riley Cooper or something like that. It was like a wide receiver for Philadelphia. I'm like, yeah, you got this in the bag. David Johnson will be fine. It wasn't just fine. He scores like 47 points for him. Just complete domination by the Cardinals here. And I don't know what else you can say. I mean, it wasn't like – I never felt like Philadelphia was out there just crapping the bed, except for that little stretch where, what, they had like two fumbles and – an interception return for a touchdown all within like 5 minutes of gameplay, where that was like, and now the game's over. I mean, just, I don't know what else to even say about it. Just, wow.
Yeah, I mean, Seth Rafford didn't have that bad of a day. 28-41, 361 yards, 2 touchdowns. Jordan Matthews had a big long touchdown and wound up with almost 160 yards. I mean, you know, Randy already mentioned David Johnson. I mean, just, the Eagles didn't look so bad, just, you know, the Cardinals were just that good that there was really just nothing they were going to be able to do. Ryan Matthews wound up being the lead carrier, 58 yards. DeMarco Murray, 2 carries, 3 yards. And that dude is such a waste in Philadelphia. But maybe just a waste period. But when Ryan Matthews and Bradford both lose fumbles, that's an issue. You don't want to give Carson Palmer multiple chances. And then Deion Buchanan gets an interception return for a touchdown. Not good. Not good at all. So, that does it for our NFL recap of Week 15. We'll be back with Week 16 on Wednesday night, Thursday morning. It's not be Friday morning because we're, you know, mindful of that holiday. We'll be back on Wednesday night doing it. So, let's get into this college football. Some of the bowls have already kicked off. I mean, do you watch anything?
I've watched a couple really interesting games. I watched, I watched the first quarter of the Las Vegas Bowl between BYU and Utah, where Utah goes up 35-0 in that first quarter. I switched it over to watch the end of the Arizona-New Mexico game, and then all of a sudden looked up at the final score, and it said Utah won 35-28. I can't tell you how it happened, but it did. Just to show you how crazy that was, we had Arizona beat New Mexico. Appalachian State and Ohio put on one hell of a game. Appalachian State scoring 24 points in the fourth quarter, including a last-second field goal. That game was a lot of fun. And then just from there, I mean, so some surprising stuff. I mean, the 5-7 San Jose State team goes out and gets a victory in a bowl game, which is really sad to say that they won a bowl game and finished the year 6-7. But you also have Louisiana Tech winning the New Orleans Bowl. And Western Kentucky, who looks strong all year, goes into Florida in the Miami Beach Bowl and beat South Florida, which, I mean, I picked Western Kentucky, but that was more of an upset pick for me. And so, I mean, right now, through just the first 7 bowl games, you have Paul, Gary, and myself tied with 6 out of 7. Sean, you're 1 behind us, going 5-2 so far. And then just a group of, what, 6 people that are 1 behind us. So it's still really close with 17,000 bowls to go.
Yeah, so we got to get in here and pick the rest of these until Wednesday night, which means we'll go from the famous Ohio-Idaho Potato Bowl to the GoDaddy Bowl. So Akron and Utah State. Akron 7-5. The Utah State Aggies are 6-6. No idea where this is being played. But I'll just
you
go
say
with
know
Akron.
Where you know where it was or why
I don't
it
know
was.
Where it's being played.
It's being played in Boise. It's the famous Idaho Potato Bowl, but there's only one town in Idaho.
Yeah.
I know. I live
Akron.
Here.
Akron. I'm gonna go with Akron.
I'm gonna go the other way. I'm gonna go Utah State. Partially because my sister actually goes to Utah State. So
actually, never mind. Apparently, in my pick'ems, I have Utah State. So.
Oh, there you go. I mean, looking at the stats, it looks like it's going to be pretty close. Akron has won its last 4 games, while Utah State is struggling, winning only 1 of their last 4. But again, this is more of a sentimental pick, you know, with my sister going there, and the fact that I've actually watched a little bit of Utah State this year, and I don't think I've seen even a zip highlight. So, yeah, I'll take Utah State.
Well, hey, I do know where this one is, since it's like 2 hours away from me in Boca Raton. Temple, who, you know, 10-3 this year. They've looked good. Toledo, who upset my Razorbacks at one point and upset a few other teams. I'm going to go with Toledo continuing to do their thing against Temple.
I'm actually going to take Temple, but I think the safer bet if you're a gambler is take the over. The over right now is 49 from what I'm looking at. And I think both these teams can just sling the ball. So look for this, like both teams to score at least 30. I think this will be one of those games where you look at it, it's like, oh, it's Temple and Toledo. But it's going to be a really fun game to watch.
Well, in the Poinsettia Bowl, the another game that could be very fun to watch, Boise State taking on Northern Illinois. I'm going to go with Boise State. But, man, watch out for those Huskies.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. I'm taking Boise State, too. But another one of those games that just has high-scoring matchup written all over it.
And then we'll end it here with the GoDaddy Bowl. Georgia Southern Eagles at 8-4 taking on the Bowling Green Falcons. At least they battle the birds going on here. I'm going to go with Bowling Green. But
what did I take? Yep. I took Bowling Green too, and here's just a stat for you. Season leaders for each team passing wise, Georgia Southern, who is very much a rushing team, their quarterback this year has gone 37 of 84 for 532 yards passing, 3 touchdowns, 5 interceptions. They averaged 61 yards passing a game. I mean, they do get 355 rushing, but you put that against Bowling Green, whose quarterback went 368 of 535 for 4,700 yards,
Jesus.
43 touchdowns, and only 8 interceptions. Just two completely different styles of offense here, which is always interesting, but I will take Bowling Green as well.
All right, well, that does it for this, at least for this podcast. We'll have a lot more all the way to Monday afternoon when we come back on Thursday morning with some more of these bowl picks, and we'll get to update you on the standings and everything like that. As far as the NFL pick 'em goes, we actually haven't done in a while. Gary's a couple of points behind me. Randy, you're leading the pack as far as the three of us goes in fourth with 136. Jace is still number one by 5 points over Daniel and 6 over Paul. And UNSLP, who will be meeting, it'll be Gary and SLP meeting the championship game of the Fantasy Football, are tied at 136. And then Chaz is in there ahead of me at 133. So still a few weeks to go. See if anybody can make some headway.
Yeah, and definitely props to our leader who is in the top 2 percentile of all of the ESPN picks.
Yeah, 98%. Ridiculous. That's crazy. Jace just, he does some research picking these games, I think, and that's why he's done very well. I mean, Daniel's 91. That's not too bad either, but, you know.
I just need to stop flip-flopping. So I sat here on the preview podcast and had Washington picked and talked myself out of that pick on the podcast and regretted it the entire time I had to watch that stupid game.
It happens. I've done it myself. Oh, yeah. It's hard. Hard not to do. But let's go back into the NFL theme here with Gary's. I mean, honestly, these are more like if you're in one of these deep leagues and you got somebody got hurt, like if you had Mariota and there's nobody because you didn't lock out the teams and whatever, I mean, that's great. I mean, for most of the – at this point, if you're in the championship game, you're not picking up anybody. But maybe if you're in that consolation bracket, I guess these might be able to help you. Denard Robinson – T.J. Yeldon's not playing for the rest of the year, so he might be a decent pickup, and he's also playing the Saints. You never know what, you know, teams can do against the Saints. Zach Mettenberger, I mean, not somebody I want to play against the Texans, but, hey, if you need a quarterback that bad, I guess.
Yeah, again, if you have Mariota gone, Mettenberger's not the worst person to pick up.
Reuben Randall, he should be the lead receiver for the Giants, if Odell Beckham's suspension holds, which it should. But, of course, we've also seen Reuben Randall have times where he just just doesn't run very good routes and whatever. But he at least usually gets a touchdown or something. So he's not too bad. Tim Hightower, he's been pretty decent the last 2 weeks. Of course, this week he didn't match up to the points that he did last week, but he could still do something for you, and it gets against Jacksonville, so you never know. And then there's that Joey Losefa for the Patriots. Look, I'm not picking up anybody at running back for the Patriots, and they just signed Steven Jackson. You never know who they're going to pull out there, honestly.
Yeah, if you're in the finals, and you go up and pick him up, and you trust a Patriots running back, you deserve to lose.
Totally agree. So, once again, our top five do not change because all these teams won. Mine still differs a little bit from Gary's and Randy's. I have New England ahead of Seattle because of who Seattle's been playing. So, I'm going to give New England the benefit of the doubt there also from history and all that. You know, we haven't talked about this, but what do you make? Is there anything to be made of the whole, the Patriots are paying for some kind of business that Tom Brady runs or something on the side? I mean, is that really a big deal?
No, I don't understand why that would.
Everybody's saying, oh my God, there's another scandal going on. And like, I'm like, what? Like, do we just want to make up scandals for the Patriots? Is that just...
So I mean, I guess explain it, because honestly, I've heard nothing about this yet. Is it just he's running a business and the Patriots are, like, financially helping him? Or, like, backing it or something? I don't understand.
Yeah, I think that's what it is. They back it. Hold on, I'm trying to...
Well, you do
Patriots
that?
Pay for a business owned by Tom Brady and a partner that has a dubious past. That's the headline.
Well, obviously, I think it's more of the dubious back partner than it's than them helping them. I mean, how many people in this world work for somebody and then they want to go out and do their own thing and their boss helps them? I mean, I don't think it's that rare.
Yeah, I don't know. They apparently had a thing. There was a drink that Alex Guerrero, who is the partner with Tom Brady, sold called the Neuroprotective Drink, called NeuroSafe. That was supposed to help you keep from getting concussions. Listen, if there's a drink that helps you keep from getting concussions, somebody actually reputable would have made it by now. Just like, there's no drink that helps you keep from getting concussions. I'm sorry. Oh my god. Yeah, and the FTC actually sanctioned him. The Federal Trade Commission sanctioned him because of that too, for selling the drink.
Well, see, actually, what you don't understand is it's a drink that keeps you from getting concussions because it's a banned substance and it gets you suspended.
Whatever. It's apparently a business owned by Brady called the TB12 Sports Therapy Center. It's at the Patriots Place complex. So, you know, I just don't think it's a...
It's whatever.
People are making such a big deal about this for no reason whatsoever. But, so let's go to our player of the week, which, man, this is an interesting... So let's run it down again, just to run it down. So we had Carlos Hyde, week one. Week two was Tom Brady. Week three, AJ Green. Week four, Devontae Freeman. Week five was Eli Manning. Week six, DeAndre Hopkins. Week seven, Kirk Cousins. Week eight, Drew Brees. Week nine, Antonio Brown. Week 10, Carson Palmer. Week 11, Cam Newton. Week 12, Russell Wilson. Week 13 was Cam Newton. Week 14 was Odell Beckham Jr. last week. Randy, you picked Cam Newton again. Gary picked Golden Tate. Kirk Cousins is in the mix again. I picked Teddy Bridgewater because I've been kind of talking bad about him, and then he goes out there and throws four touchdowns, runs for one. I mean, but obviously Cam Newton was in the much bigger game.
Listen, I'm going to put Cam Newton. I mean, I'm a broken record here, but five touchdowns, 100 yards rushing, just I had to put him there. But here, I'll even do this just to change the mold, because I think all three people that you just brought up, Newton, Tate, and Bridgewater, all have amazing games. So let's just throw all three of those guys out. We just talked about this guy just a minute ago. Why don't we just give this to David Johnson? That's another guy. 187 yards rushing, three touchdowns in his breakout game where they finally went, here, let's see what you can do. And boy, did he show what he could do.
Why not? All right, so David Johnson is our player of the week for week 15. Well, that puts an end to the week 15 talk. We will be back in a couple of days talking about week 16 already. And, yeah, that should be interesting. Some interesting games to talk about, some more games that are kind of stinkers, but it kind of always gets like that this time of the year. But we'll have to see when we get to it, and more bowl games.
And once again, you know, the NFL was nice enough to let everyone go hang out with their families on Christmas Eve because no one needs to watch San Diego and Oakland.
Yeah, depending on what I'm doing, I think I get out like at 6. If I'm like dead tired, I might still do something with that because I may not go like an hour away to go do stuff with people I really don't like. I'm just being honest there. I'd rather much just wait for my mom, the wife, and daughter to get back and do everything on Christmas Day and not have to deal with just my mom's family. Sometimes can be quite a bit of, they'd like to talk too much. But, and it's not something you want to hear when you just got off like an 8-hour work shift and you're just like, anything but this right now.
It's one of those weird things to hear somebody who hosts 5 different podcasts say that his family talks too much.
No, I'm talking about
I'm kidding, Sean.
Yeah. yeah. What's so funny is that I talk a lot on here. I don't talk much. We're not doing podcasts. So. But yeah, so that being said, the wrestling podcast will be done the same way we kind of always done it. It will be done first on Wednesday. Then we'll turn around and do this podcast. I think that leaves it open for me to do the co-op multi podcast on Tuesday when I get off of, or Wednesday as soon as I get off of work at like 5 or something like that. And, Randy, I don't know if, I'm guessing you guys have another one for the year, or do you not have another one at all?
We have the one, backlogbusting.com, our year end award podcast launches tomorrow. We pre-taped it a couple weeks ago to kind of clear our schedule. Our next live podcast will be at the beginning of January.
All right. Well, there you have it. Until a couple days from now, see everybody later.